WML News at 7. Good morning. I'm Heather Curtis. Explosions rocked Ukraine's capital city of Kyiv this morning. Officials say it looks like a Russian missile attack on critical infrastructure. The regional government says about 18 homes were damaged. Nobody died. And another official says two missiles hit Ukraine's second largest city. Outrage in D.C. after three young kids were shot and injured in the last 2 weeks. Ward 4 Councilmember Janice Lewis-George speaking alongside residents saying the shootings have to stop.
Killing and shooting in our neighborhoods is unacceptable. Especially when our babies are getting shot and some killed.
This week, a 6-year-old girl and 9-year-old boy were shot getting off a Metro bus on the way home from school when police say a fight on the bus was taken outside. The search continues for the man who pulled the trigger. Last week, an 8-year-old was among 4 people shot on Georgia Avenue. A fight involving students and employees in Tuscarora High School's main hallway during a basketball game last night needed to be broken up. The Frederick County Sheriff's Office says deputies helped. No word on injuries or what led up to the fight. No charges were filed, but the school system will discipline all the students involved. Loudoun County is changing how it fights crime, and not everyone's happy about it.
The sheriff's office expressing disappointment in Commonwealth Attorney Buba Bibarai's plan to stop prosecuting a number of misdemeanors, saying in a statement, "We are doing everything in our power to support our deputies through this transition and will make every effort to ensure we continue to partner with the community to provide the same great service." Attorney General Jason Miara says a change establishes a dangerous precedent. Bibarai says the county needs to dedicate more time to prosecuting more serious offenses, such as violent crime and driving under the influence. Rachel Sutherland on WMAL and WMAL.com.
Still, Bibarai says her office will still participate in misdemeanors. She also says a letter about the change was released too soon. Most of California facing more storms and flooding this weekend. At the National Weather Service office in Sacramento, meteorologist Katrine Hand says they're coping with heavy rain, flooding, and strong winds.
We're talking wind gusts anywhere from 40 to 50 miles per hour out of the south direction. And that's just for the valley. The mountains could see higher gusts, 50 to 65 miles per hour.
She also says snowfall totals today in the nearby Sierras could top 6 feet this weekend. After months of growing into the fourth largest lottery jackpot in U.S. history, someone finally wins the grand prize.
It was an extremely lucky Friday the 13th for the person who holds the only winning ticket for the massive $1.35 billion Mega Millions grand prize. That ticket, sold in Maine, was the state's first Mega Millions jackpot winner. The billion-plus prize would be paid out over 30 years, or the winner could take the cash option of nearly $725 million. There were other winners, although far less grand. 14 tickets won $1 million each. Carmen Roberts, Fox News.
WMAL Sports, the first round of the NFL playoffs kicks off today. The Seahawks play the 49ers, the Chargers play the Jaguars, and the Wizards fell to the Knicks. Up next, traffic and weather on WMAL. Traffic and weather on News Talk 105.9 WMAL. Here's Albie D in the Hadid Carpet Cleaning Traffic Center.
On the Virginia side of the Beltway, it is a good morning. On the inner loop and outer loop, I didn't see any crashes in the cameras. I don't have any reports of any construction being set up yet. On 66 in Fairfax County, eastbound and westbound lanes are at the posted speed limit. On 95 in Virginia, between the Beltway and Fredericksburg, you're not hitting your brakes on the northbound side or on the southbound side. No crashes or construction in your way. And if you are going in D.C., 295, 395, and 695, all lanes are clear and at the posted speed limit. And now from GarageDoorRepair.com, the WMAL StormWatch 7 forecast.
Gusty winds will keep those temperatures down today in the low 40s, and the wind chills in the 20s and 30s. Clouds will be out there this morning, but a few sunshine peaks this afternoon, and then tomorrow a lot more sunshine with warmer temperatures in the upper 40s. I'm 7 News meteorologist Jordan Evans in the First Alert Weather Center.
36 degrees in Washington. I'm Heather Curtis on WMAL.
Now on News Talk 105.9 WMAL.
The Saturday morning update. hour two of the Saturday morning update for this Martin Luther King holiday weekend. John Gizzi joins us, White House correspondent, chief political columnist at Newsmax.com. Good morning, John.
Good morning, Rick.
Just when you think you've seen it all, wow, what a week for the Biden administration.
What a week for Joe Biden and the Department of Justice. Look, there were papers found in not one, not two, but three locations that Joe Biden apparently received and possibly took when he was leaving the office of vice president. These were uncovered in a report by Jamie Gengel, veteran correspondent who is very well sourced throughout the administration and apparently at the Department of Justice. Now, it is reported that these papers were discovered in November of this year, but they're only recently coming to light. Why? Well, it could very well have to do with something called the elections in November.
Do you
and
think?
Someone holding back on this, do I think? Now, the Department of Justice under Attorney General Merrick Garland is taking action right away and following through with a special counsel. Swell. What's the politics of this? Well, if the story sounds familiar, this is what Donald Trump is now under investigation for doing, namely bringing government documents to his personal residence, not so much the garage or his old Corvette, but to his residence nonetheless. And that culminated in the now famous FBI raid at Mar-a-Lago last summer. The likelihood now is that whatever the special counsel reports, it's advantage Trump, and he will not be charged with anything.
What about the cover-up aspect in this? Not only the November to January delay, but it seemed this week that as they were talking about the first set of documents, coming up on the Chiron is the second set of documents that they haven't announced yet because they're still talking about the first set. And then they're talking about the second set. And then the third set comes up on the Chiron as breaking news while they're still talking about the second set.
Well, one has to ask, what is the next shoe to drop? And then one realizes, well, these shoes could very well be on a centipede. Look, Rick, the fact is that this came out in November, and then they were finding out everything from Biden's Washington office in the Penn Biden Center to his garage to his Corvette. And one has to ask, why is a vice president getting these papers? Historically, vice presidents leave Washington with very little and within 90 days lose their Secret Service protection. Within a short time, unless they've won another office or running for president, they fade into obscurity. This does not entitle them to top secret papers or anything that would come under the category of classified. Put another way, Dan Quayle, Dick Cheney, all left office and wrote books. Did they have classified material? Almost certainly no.
But even if they did, theoretically, they would have returned it. I'm just thinking 6 years this stuff's been sitting in some office downtown, the UPenn Biden office. Don't they have cleaning people that go in and out of there? Who else went in and out of there? Who's seen this stuff?
Well, and of course that raises another prospect. In the Biden home, if these things were in his car or in the garage, who would see them? Family members? Perhaps Hunter Biden? Again, these are fair questions, and in a Republican-controlled House that it's in a mood to do investigations and oversight, we may find out.
So the president has been mulling over and, you know, teasing an announcement about a 2024 run. What does this mean on the political side, not only for his presidential race, but for filling out the term and the impact on the Democratic Party overall?
It once again raises the question of whether Joe Biden has what it takes to be president at the age of 80 plus. Let's put it right on the table. The fact is that this is something he did not need now and is going to have to explain to voters. It's one more problem and one more argument as to why he should step down. Now, having said that, I talked to Democratic staffers on Capitol Hill on last Friday during the vote for Speaker. To a person, they say, well, with all this speculation, Biden's going to run.
While we're on questionable behavior by public officials, the incoming congressman who has been sworn in, apparently going to be on committees, George Santos of New York, where do you see his future, John?
Well, at this point, Speaker Kevin McCarthy, who knows he needs every Republican vote he can get after last week's marathon speaker wars, is going to respect the will of the voters of George Santos's district and the fact that he's 25 years of age, a legal resident of the state that includes his district, and holder of a certificate of election. So he was sworn in, so he has an office and can hire a staff and can be assigned to committees. Speaker McCarthy adding they will not be anything near dealing with top secret material. Okay, that said, the wheels of justice are moving. This is someone who confabulated a whole life, from education to jobs that he had, to net worth, even to his religious faith, and sold the voters a bill of goods that they voted for. In all likelihood, the Nassau County District Attorney's Office, as well as the House Ethics Committee, will investigate where George Santos got $750,000 from his own personal account in years where he made far less than that as income to jumpstart his campaign. If this were money that came illegally or if someone gave him a chunk of this money, well, that could be called channeling, which under the law is prosecutable. My guess is he will be gone by the summer. He insists he's not going anywhere.
So, John, if he leaves, forced out, whatever, what happens in terms of replacing him? Does somebody appoint a new congressman for the interim, or is there a special election?
No, a lot of people ask that, Rick. The Senate is where appointment fills a vacancy. In the House, there's an immediate special election, and state law says it has to be within a certain time period. Governor Kathy Hochul will call the election. The respective parties will nominate candidates. In all likelihood, Robert Zimmerman, who was defeated by George Santos, will be the Democratic nominee. The New York papers report that Republicans are declining to run, fearing that there's going to be a bad taste in the voters' mouth for being sold a bill of goods. Let's put it on the table. If George Santos resigns, the special election is called, the odds are pretty overwhelming. A Democrat will win the seat back. And this is something Kevin McCarthy doesn't want. Hence, the Speaker saying it's all right for George Santos to vote, if that's his name.
Yeah, so one might just speculate that Speaker McCarthy doesn't want to take points off the board right now.
I don't speculate. I just report. But
while we're speculating, we may speculate on who may be the next senator from California. Dianne Feinstein, now at 89. There have been a lot of questions about her health recently and her fitness to serve. And it seems as though the vultures in the Democratic Party are starting to circle already.
Yes, and for many who have followed Dianne Feinstein's career, going back to when she became mayor of San Francisco following the death of incumbent George Moscone, that was in 1978, it's kind of sad to see her not saying she'll step down in 2024, but seeing others conduct a campaign as if she's already headed for the retirement and gold watch. Last week, Congresswoman Katie Porter of Southern California announced as a candidate, has money in the bank, and is running. Adam Schiff, former chairman of the House Intelligence Committee, is sitting on a multi-million-dollar kitty and can run despite his 20 years plus of seniority. He's in the minority, so he might figure, why not go double or nothing? And Barbara Lee, one of the most far-left Democrats in the House, one could call her AOC West, she has already signaled she might run. Now, one other thing about this, Rick. California has a system in which everyone appears on the ballot regardless of party, and the top two voters square off in a November runoff. The Golden State is almost a one-party state, so it's safe to say that the successor to Dianne Feinstein, assuming the senator is stepping down, will be someone who is to her left.
And here's a replacement that we don't have to speculate about. Senator Ben Sasse has left early, and he has been replaced.
This was something that all of us in the punditocracy saw coming. Republican Governor Pete Ricketts was a lame duck, filling out his second term. His hand-picked successor, Jim Pillen, the new Republican governor, just bided his time, and as soon as he was in there, appointed his predecessor to the Senate. Ben Sasse is now president of the University of Florida, enjoying the weather a lot more than in cold Nebraska.
John Gizzi, White House correspondent, chief political columnist at Newsmax.com. Looking forward to the week ahead, I'll bet.
I certainly am. It's going to be exciting. And then again, since this Congress finally decided who'd be wielding the gavel, it hasn't been boring.
All right. We got Cheryl Atkinson coming up next. Tony Schaefer's on the way. KT McFarland. But right now, Al BD's taking a look at the WMAL Traffic Center report.
On the Virginia side of the Beltway, it is a good morning. On the inner loop and outer loop, I didn't see any crashes in the cameras. I don't have any reports of any construction being set up yet. On 66 in Fairfax County, eastbound and westbound lanes are at the posted speed limit. On 95 in Virginia, between the Beltway and Fredericksburg, you're not hitting your brakes on the northbound side or on the southbound side. No crashes or construction in your way. And if you are going in D.C., 295, 395, and 695, all lanes are clear and at the posted speed limit. And now from GarageDoorRepair.com, the WMAL Stormwatch 7 forecast.
Gusty northwest winds will keep those temperatures down today in the low 40s, and the wind chills in the 20s and 30s for your entire Saturday. Now, clouds will be out there this morning, but a few sunshine peaks this afternoon, and then tomorrow expect a lot more sunshine with warmer temperatures in the upper 40s. I'm 7 News meteorologist Jordan Evans in the First Alert Weather Center.
34 degrees in the nation's capital, 723 Saturday morning update. It is the Saturday morning update on WMAL. I'm Rick Fowler. Cheryl Atkinson is with us each week. She hosts Full Measure. That's every Sunday morning at 10 on ABC 7, then throughout the day on News Channel 8. Cheryl, great to have you with us once again.
Good to be here. Thank you.
We've seen so much attention paid to the southern border, the migration, but it's not just the southern border where there's a real problem for the migrants coming up. And you take us to a location that I am sure many of our listeners are not familiar with. I was not familiar with. It's called the Darien Gap, but it is not anywhere near Darien, Connecticut.
No, in fact, I had talked to illegal immigrants after they came across, and they would talk about this treacherous route, the Darien Gap, and so I set to find out more about it, and then Scott Thuman went down there for it. He's going to report from there Sunday on Full Measure. This is a place, a treacherous botch of land, and jungle and mountainous region between Colombia and Panama. And for hundreds of thousands of people who have, in the last couple of years, made their way from South America to illegally cross the border into the U.S., they have to pass through here if they're crossing by land. And they tell a story, horror stories, not just because people are falling off cliffs and breaking bones and lacking food and water, but because they say there are bandits and indigenous peoples in this area that know these poor people are coming through, and they rape, they rob, they steal. It's really terrible. So Scott found out from some of the people when he went down there recently what it's like, why they're willing to risk their lives and make this journey to come into the United States right now.
We've heard about the payments that the migrants often make to coyotes, but it's not just one payment, apparently.
No, I mean, you know, there are big payments that they have to pay the cartel, sometimes in two or three big chunks, with sometimes family members held at hostage if the money doesn't come or to get more money. But in addition to that, they're telling us stories about they're paying smaller amounts to be led through this jungle, this Darien Gap. Then they have to pay on the other end. They come out to this sort of a camp. They're starving. They're tired. They pay for some, sometimes they pay for some goods and food, and then they pay oftentimes for a ticket to get a ride to the next city and continue moving further on north. So they're just sort of exploited from one end to the other. I think these journeys cost even more money than they expect when they embark upon them. They've saved their money and gathered up what they can, but they have to pay more. Some of them say all of a sudden they owe more on the trip and they have to work a little bit and try to earn some money to pay people to make the next piece of the trip. And all this, you know, as many people have observed, is caused by us. The idea that they think they can cross the border illegally and stay encourages them to risk their lives and pay the cartels, which enriches the cartels who are bringing in the fentanyl that's killing Americans and doing all the other bad stuff. So it's just really a vicious cycle.
I think there's been sort of a feeling over the years that Hispanic voters typically vote Democratic, but we've been seeing some changes in that direction over the past couple of elections. And what are you finding? You dig deep into that tomorrow.
Well, people don't like to admit this, but President Trump really turned around a lot of minority vote. It doesn't mean that most minority vote is going to Republicans or went to Trump, but more of it went to him than in the past to Republicans. And there is, it turns out, a big shift in the Hispanic vote. I think this has been touched upon in some mainstream news reports as they've recognized this in the past few years, but it happened again in the midterms. Democrats can still count on getting the majority of the Hispanic vote, but far smaller majority, if that makes sense, than they used to be able to count on. And I'll have the numbers Sunday, but it's pretty dramatic in terms of how many Hispanics have switched over and they're expected to vote for Trump when you look at projections in the next election, how many did vote for Trump in the last election and what they did during the midterms.
What do you see as the key issues that would influence their vote? What's important to the Hispanic voter these days?
Well, when I spoke to the Hispanic person who led the poll, who works for a Hispanic media company, he says they're pretty much like everybody else in terms of things they care about, which their family, prosperity, economy. But he says one thing, and I've heard this before too, but one key thing is many of them come from communist nations or nations that have these communist tendencies and things have fallen apart from the economy to politics to individual freedoms. They come here knowing, or they have family members that live in these places, understanding what can happen if the country goes too far down, you know, certain roads, and they see Republicans, the ones who are changing their vote to Republicans, they see Republicans as stopping this dive that they see much of the country going down. So that's a big issue. Plus, there is very strong religious base and religious culture among many Hispanic Americans, and that brings them in line with some Republicans talking about Catholics and their beliefs in the pro-life side of things and so on.
Russian President Putin said that one big reason that he attacked Ukraine was to, quote, denazify that country. And the big question is that just bluster from Vladimir Putin, or are there really Nazis in Ukraine? You went to Europe to find out.
Yeah, and like a lot of things, it turns out there's some element of truth perhaps in both. There are Nazis in Ukraine. The experts I spoke to do not disagree on that. But they say there's a lot of context that Putin ignores or that is left out of the conversation when that discussion is had. For example, they say the Nazis, this is the Anti-Defamation League, one of the experts I spoke to in Europe, the Nazi movement in Ukraine is not very big, but they have joined in many instances with the nationalist movement to fight Russia. So they are fighting Russia together, and that kind of blurs the line. And as it was explained to me, when you see these videos, as I have seen and showed them and tried to track down whether true or not, when you see these videos in Ukraine of people flying Nazi flags at parades and in stadiums making Nazi symbols and signs, it's not, according to these experts, necessarily that they're promoting Nazism as much as they are promoting nationalism. That kind of means something different to many of them today. So I'll get to the bottom of what I learned and how I got to the bottom of what's true and what's not true and give the context for it Sunday on Full Measure.
And that is Full Measure tomorrow morning, ABC 7, 10 o'clock, and throughout the day on News Channel 8. Cheryl, thank you very much.
Thank you.
7:30 News coming up next with Heather Curtis, then back with Lieutenant Colonel Tony Schaefer and K.T. McFarland. Stay with us.
WMAL-FM, Woodbridge, Washington, a Cumulus Media station.
Making sense of the news.
News Talk 105.9.
News now.
WMAL News at 7:30. Good morning. I'm Heather Curtis. An impassioned plea from Washingtonians after three young kids were shot in the last 2 weeks. Ward 4 Councilmember Janice Lewis-George.
Put the guns down. Use your words. Figure it out.
She says a lot of the shootings stem from social media posts.
I'm asking for this conflict over nothing, over Instagram, over TikTok, over Facebook stories. We're not fighting over that anymore.
Last week, a fight that started on a Metro bus, or this week rather, led a man to open fire outside the bus as 6- and 9-year-old were shot getting off on their way home from school. Last week, an 8-year-old was shot on Georgia Avenue. Someone is $1.35 billion richer this morning, and it's not you. The winning ticket for last night's Mega Millions jackpot was sold in Maine. This is the first time a Mega Millions jackpot winning ticket was sold in the state. The jackpot became the second largest in Mega Millions history after 25 drawings with no winner. An apartment search in New Jersey sends 11 Camden County police officers to the hospital with fentanyl poisoning. Fox's Ashley Strohmeyer.
Officers found more than 1,000 bags of fentanyl, 5 ounces of loose fentanyl, and then $40,000 in cash and a handgun at the scene. 5 people were arrested on possession charges.
All of the officers are now out of the hospital. WMAL Sports, the first round of the NFL playoffs kicks off today. The Seahawks play the 49ers, the Chargers play the Jaguars, and the Wizards fell to the Knicks. Traffic and weather next on News Talk 105.9 WMAL. Here's Albie D in the Hadid Carpet Cleaning Traffic Center.
In Montgomery County, heads up Georgia Avenue. All lanes are blocked just south of Randolph Road. There is a pole in the roadway right at Henderson Avenue. On 95 northbound at College Park, there is road construction. Right lane is closed after the Beltway. On the Beltway, all lanes are clear on the inner loop and on the outer loop in Prince George's County and in Montgomery County. And in Montgomery County, on 270 between the Beltway and Frederick, you're not tapping the brakes on the northbound side or even on the southbound side. And now from GarageDoorRepair.com, the WMAL Storm Watch 7 forecast.
Gusty winds will keep those temperatures down today in the low 40s, and the wind chills in the 20s and 30s. Clouds will be out there this morning, but a few sunshine peaks this afternoon, and then tomorrow a lot more sunshine with warmer temperatures in the upper 40s. I'm 7 News meteorologist Jordan Evans in the First Alert Weather Center.
Right now, 36 degrees in Washington. I'm Heather Curtis on News Talk 105.9 WMAL.
Saturday morning update continues. I'm Rick Fowler. Lieutenant Colonel Tony Schaefer joins us. He is the president of the London Center for Policy Research, co-host of the Thought to Action podcast. Tony, good morning.
Hey, good morning, Rick. Always great to be here.
Well, President Biden, a little sloppy with some documents over the years. And what strikes you about this story? Each of the people we're talking with this morning have a unique perspective on this. What struck you?
So let's start with my theory of the crime. I think these things showed up about 2017. As you remember, there was a big event back then that people found very hard to accept, which was the victory of Donald Trump. And it seems to me from the information I've read so far regarding his staff's sworn affidavits and testimony, they moved this stuff because, quote unquote, they were afraid of Trump coming in, which tells me that this had to do with Hunter Biden's wrongdoing, just saying. So I think we're going to come to find that as we sort through these things had both a personal and direct link to whatever was going on in the Obama administration relating to Joe Biden and Hunter. And I think that's where people are not asking enough questions. Why else would you take and do something so risky? So that's my first posit, that these things were like of such a heavy impact, and they were highly sensitive leased some of the documents which were found in his Penn Biden office in D.C., I'm told, are beyond top secret. They're code word stuff, which means we had assets reporting on Hunter's activities in great detail. Now, secondly, I don't believe for a minute that they didn't know these documents were out there for all these years. This is insane. You don't just let highly classified documents sit in a closet for all that time, especially, come on, Rick. I mean, when they transitioned into the White House, they went through everything. They found everything he'd need. You don't just leave stuff sitting in the closet, just saying. And this whole idea that I do see Biden being dim enough to actually store them in a garage through his Corvette. I do see that. That's like, yeah, that's the one element of the story. It's like, yeah, I could see that. But the rest of it is nonsense. So those are the two things I open with regarding my perspective on the whole Hunter Biden. I mean, I'm sorry, that's a slip. The whole Biden classified documents issue.
Well, there were reports that during the Obama administration, there were people in the administration raising red flags about Hunter Biden's activities.
No doubt. And I think, again, there were people inside who were very concerned and tried to make a stink of it. And I think there was reports that indicated that. I think there was intelligence. Again, we have the most expensive intelligence collection system in the world. Some of those documents, again, I don't know. I don't have direct access, but I'm just saying based on doing this a day or two, I suspect there's some code word. For those in the audience who remember Blue Border reporting from the old days, I suspect that some of that was Blue Border reporting from a high-level source that had laid out the duplicity, and that's why those things had to be grabbed. By the way, there's not a lot of copies of those things. So they probably thought they could get away with never disclosing it because, you know, there was just so few copies of these code word documents. But I think that's what they wanted. That's what Biden took. And I think that's why he personally did his personal material that he tried to store himself.
All right. I want to turn to Ukraine. We hear more and more reports about the fighting and where this may go, whether there could be a negotiated settlement. What is your assessment at this point in the war?
So, again, being neither pro or against either side, it appears that the Russians are nearly complete in securing the city of Soledar. It's a major spot regarding logistics and command and control between the Kiev and another city that's being heavily contested right now, Bakhmut. And so these two cities are seen as key and vital centers that the Ukrainians were able to retake. Clearly, they were victorious, and now the Russians have moved back. And according to Reuters, because it's a mainstream source, it appears that Soledar is in Russian control, although the Ukrainians say it's not. So my concern here, Rick, is this. The Ukrainians have given everything they got to get to where they're at now. They're not going to get a lot more combat force. They're going to get the Patriot missiles. It's been disclosed that they have Ukrainians going to Fort Sill, Oklahoma to get trained. It's going to be too little too late because right now the Russians have 250,000 troops that they've mobilized, trained up. The conditions for weather, for heavy armor is getting favorable. I just believe that the Russians are holding back and getting ready to go back on a major offensive, an offensive that I just don't think the Ukrainians have, again, sufficient combat force to counter. It comes down to the number of people that you have in the field that you can put physically on the ground to secure and maintain the territory, and that's what I'm concerned about right now. And so we'll see how it rolls out, but I'm just saying, you know, sources I find credible, including Reuters, is saying right now the Russians have, you know, retaken this one very key town within eastern Ukraine.
Got about a minute left. Quick question. Sure. We've seen oligarchs and others falling from balconies. Report that the New York Times accidentally leaked numbers of Russian soldiers who criticized Ukraine war and Putin, leaked their cell phone numbers. What does that mean for them?
Well, look, I'm just telling you, the Russians are not good guys, and they're going to go about trying to suppress any dissent as best they can. I mean, Putin is a thug. So what it tells me is that, you know, look, there are people out there willing to leak information to cause the morale of the Russians to fall. That's what's going on here. That's fine. You know, this is war. But somehow, you know, we somehow project our own values on both of those cultures, and it's wrong because, again, Putin is trying to survive and win. Ukraine's trying to survive and win. They're cut from the same cloth. They're all from the old Soviet Union. So nothing surprises me at this point regarding how far they're going to go to undermine each other using propaganda and intimidation. So there you go.
Lieutenant Colonel Tony Schaefer, check out his Thought to Action podcast at londoncenter.org. Tony, have a great weekend.
You too. Thanks, Rick.
You betcha. KT McFarland is next, but first, Al BD has a look at the traffic in WMAL Traffic Center.
In D.C., on 295, 395, and 695, currently no crashes or construction slowing you down in either direction. Now into Virginia on the Beltway. Looked at the cameras around the Beltway, inner loop and outer loop, you're clear. On 66 in Fairfax County, no delays on the eastbound side or even on the westbound side. And finally, on 95 in Virginia, between the Beltway and Fredericksburg, set your cruise control. Lanes are wide open both on the northbound side and on the southbound side. And now from GarageDoorRepair.com, the WMAL Stormwatch 7 forecast.
Gusty northwest winds will keep those temperatures down today in the low 40s, and the wind chills in the 20s and 30s for your entire Saturday. Now, clouds will be out there this morning, but a few sunshine peaks this afternoon, and then tomorrow expect a lot more sunshine with warmer temperatures in the upper 40s. I'm 7 News meteorologist Jordan Evans in the First Alert Weather Center.
34 degrees, 747, Saturday morning update. The Saturday morning update continues. I'm Rick Fowler. KT McFarland is with us, President Trump's Deputy National Security Advisor, board member of the American Conservative Union, the author of the best-selling book, Revolution, Trump, Washington, and We the People. KT, honored to have you with us this morning.
Honor and a pleasure for me.
So we've seen the story that Merrick Garland, the Attorney General, has appointed a special counsel in the investigation of the documents. Kind of struck me that DOJ knew about this November 2nd, and they didn't appoint a special counsel until this week when the story leaked, apparently, through CNN's Jamie Gangel.
Well, look, they had to appoint a special counsel. Why? Well, Merrick Garland's about to get raked over the coals over weaponization of the Department of Justice and the FBI with this new House committee that Jim Jordan is going to chair. And he's already got a game plan. He knows how he's going to go about it. There's massive amounts of evidence that the Department of Justice, particularly Merrick Garland and the FBI, treated Republicans and Democrats very differently, going way back to before President Trump ran for president. So I think if the Attorney General had ignored this Biden document situation, which he probably wanted to, if he continued to prosecute Trump, well, Garland would have proved the point to the Republican committee that he's treating two presidents very differently. I mean, the irony of this all is now having made such a huge deal about Trump, it's now going to be very difficult for the Department of Justice to prosecute Trump, no matter what evidence they have or don't have, because if they do and they don't prosecute Biden or they find Biden innocent or, you know, maybe the secure box that's locked in the garage with the Corvette was more secure than Donald Trump's office, you know, it just the whole thing proves the point. So I'm not giving Merrick Garland any big kudos for having done the right thing. I think he had no choice. But what concerned me about the whole document thing was who had access to the Biden-Penn Center. It was paid for by the Chinese. We all know that China has had some special relationship with Hunter Biden. They don't even make a secret of that, and the 10% for the big guy. So it all those things start adding up. The Biden administration is soft on China. President Biden, as vice president and after vice president, had a financial interest in a relationship with China. And now the Chinese are paying for the Biden's government in waiting, it turns out, the Biden Penn Center. So who had access to this stuff? You're supposed to, when you leave government, turn over everything to the archives. You're not supposed to keep copies. I didn't keep copies. I turned over everything, not only my devices, but my daily calendar, all of that. That's one of the reasons I had so much trouble with the FBI and Mueller, because they had all my documents. I had no records to refresh my memory, and they wouldn't let me have access to my papers. So was I the only person in government who ever played by the rules? I mean, maybe. Because so far, the Department of Justice and the archives has what they were given from the Biden's lawyers. They didn't conduct any search. Who knows if there's more stuff out there? The premises of the Biden Penn Center was never searched. You know, were other members of the Biden administration, when they were in waiting to become members of the Biden administration, did they keep documents there? What the heck is there? We don't know. And I think that the whole thing, once the investigation starts, who knows where it leads? But I think that in general, you know, the Republicans are only taking the lead from what the Democrats did. The Democrats and the Obama administration, the Biden administration, they set a lot of precedents, right? They castigate Trump, and it turns out that Biden had done the same thing. Pelosi kicks Republican members off of certain committees when she was Speaker. Well, now the precedent is set for Speaker McCarthy to do the same thing. Senator Schumer, as majority leader, has effectively ended the filibuster and the confirmation of judges requiring two-thirds. Well, now, you know, now the precedent is set for Republicans to do the same. So I think that the Democrats, in their zeal to do whatever they're doing to amass in power, have now really kind of screwed themselves up, because now the Republicans have the precedent set.
So you're in a high-level position at the White House as the Deputy National Security Advisor. When you left, I mean, how did you handle things when you left that position? And knowing maybe down the road you might want to write a memoir or revolution, you know, how did you handle that?
I turned everything over. When you leave those jobs, you have to meet with archives, the Department of Archives personnel, as well as your own office. In my case, it was the National Security Council. You sign all sorts of documents. You turn over all of your, you know, cell phone, all that stuff. And you give them access to everything. Your access to your own records completely ceases. You can't go in and check your old emails. You know, you can't go in and check your own files, your own records. I didn't keep copies of this stuff. You weren't supposed to keep the classified stuff. You certainly weren't supposed to keep copies of. If you want to write a memoir, you're supposed to access the archives or the presidential library of the office that you were in, and then you can, you know, go sit in that library and access your old records. But it's pretty clear to me that these other guys were not playing by the rules. They were taking their papers home. And whether Donald Trump did the same thing, maybe everybody does the same thing. Maybe that's how Washington works. Everybody cheats and nobody says anything about it. But I find it just very troubling that the Biden people were doing exactly the same thing and are now stunned that they should be held accountable.
I'm going to go out on a stretch here a little bit. Hank Johnson, one of the Democratic congressmen, basically came out and clearly said that these documents could have been planted by Republicans. So if he can say that, I can say this. And that is, I'm just asking the question, Chinese funding this office in D.C., over a six-year period, the documents are there. Is there a chance, and I only ask the question, is there a chance that they get a call and a Chinese student is going to be in Washington and would, you know, like to go into the Penn Biden Center and would like to, you know, see the place and whatever, and you've got actual Chinese operatives coming into Washington? I mean, is that possible?
We don't know. And that's, I think, one of the big problems, is that the cozy relationship with the Chinese that the Biden people have, I think, is very worrisome. And maybe the new House Committee on Select Committee on China, we're supposed to look at China competitiveness with the United States. Are we economically and militarily and technologically competitive enough? Maybe it spills over and starts looking at the Chinese influence in American politics. How many politicians have they bought? I still don't think we've had answers about the Congressman Swalwell from California, who had a honeypot relationship with a Chinese spy, who was one of his main fundraisers. You know, and somehow it's okay with that. He can sit on the Intelligence Committee. The whole thing just reeks. If I were a Democrat right now, I would be rushing to say, look, there's no connection here. No, nobody did anything. I'm completely clean. And yet they don't seem to be willing to do it, which leads you to believe that maybe there's more stuff going on. That Biden-Pence Center, you know, what happens with the Democrats, whether it's the Clinton Foundation or the Biden-Pence Center, is that somebody, usually foreigners, give a lot of money for them to have, to set up an office and get paid and to just be a government in waiting so that then when the Republicans lose and the Democrats win, all those people just scoop themselves right into the same jobs, one notch higher than they had in the previous Democrat administration. And that whole relationship of foreign money buying in advance influence with American political leaders, I think is something that should be looked into. If we don't let foreigners donate to campaigns, we shouldn't let foreigners buy our leaders who are in between government jobs.
I want to ask you about the media and their handling, but one other just thought, and it's just a thought because we don't have time to get into a discussion on it, is how many documents may have disappeared over 6 years? I mean, we're talking about what's left. How do we know what didn't get returned? How do we know what walked out?
Again, you don't know because nobody searched it. This is all on the good faith of President Biden's lawyers.
Let's turn to the media. Generally, the media has been very friendly to Joe Biden up to this point. What do you think happens next?
I was interested because I listened to the White House press conference yesterday, and they were kind of tough on her. And they've rarely been tough on her. I mean, she reads off her little talking points, and she continues to, you know, repeat the same thing over and over again. But the media was really, I mean, as you point out at the beginning, this was CNN. Was it CNN that broke the story?
Mm-hmm.
And the New York Times has reported on the story. Now, previously, those organizations could be counted on never to say anything bad about Biden, no matter what. And their main question for him at a press conference is, what flavor ice cream do you like? Well, is the media starting to look a little more carefully and closely at the Biden administration and President Biden himself? I mean, I'm looking down the road and say 18 months from now when you have debates between a vigorous, young, articulate, smart, conservative Republican governor or senator, whoever's running against Joe Biden, and then you have this old guy who is, you know, can't answer the tough questions other than the flavor of the ice cream, it's going to be a bloodbath. And I think the Democrats, as they get closer to that point, are going to start understanding that maybe he's a liability and not a great advantage. And at what point do they make a decision to pressure him not to run? Maybe he never gives in. Maybe he just continues to run. Or if he waits until the very last minute to say, I'm not running, then the Democrats are kind of stuck with a vice president who nobody likes. And so I think that in their zeal, what they're doing is kind of, you know, leveling the playing field or clearing a lane or whatever euphemism you want to use for a really strong, energetic Republican conservative to win the White House in 24.
And then one last quick thing. The change in sort of the attitude toward Trump here and the destruction of Trump they've tried to pull off.
They can keep trying, but he's still standing. You know, how many impeachments, how many investigations, how many lawsuits, how many people investigating? He's still standing. Pretty extraordinary, isn't it?
KT McFarland, and we appreciate it, KT. As always, hope you have a very good holiday weekend.
You too. Thank you.
KT McFarland, author of Revolution, Trump, Washington, and We the People. That's it for the Saturday Morning Update. Garden Sense this afternoon at 1.
WMAL-FM, Woodbridge, Washington, a Cumulus Media station.
Making sense of the news.
News Talk 105.9. WMAL-FM.